Hey there. Welcome to the Unpresentable Parts podcast, your go-to spot for conversations that matter, hosted by Tim Blake and Titus Walelo. We're breaking down barriers and building bridges, one story at a time. Tim and Titus invite you into a space where the vulnerable becomes powerful. Ready to join the conversation? Let's dive in.
Welcome to the Unpresentable Parts podcast. My name's Tim Blake, and this is my lovely queen,
Sam Blake.
And these two light-skinned elderly folks in the middle of us, that's Stephen and Gina Mitchell. We'll get to them in a second. There's something comforting about having old friends. But then when your old friends are actually old friends, we appreciate it.
I got a special present for you.
But this is Stephen.
You look younger than you.
You do. You look a little younger. You look warmer than us, I'll tell you that.
For sure.
80 degrees, baby.
But welcome. We wanted to have Stephen and Gina Mitchell on. They've been longtime friends. They knew me when I was single. Before I answered the call from that desperate woman calling from the Northeast, asking when she could come
out. They tried to warn me.
And you've been blessed. Anyway, so in any case, today we're gonna have a little talk with Stephen and Gina. The hope, the prayer, if Gina is actually willing and humble and obedient to her husband, that they will be kind of a regular part of some of what we do this coming year. Anyway, I love Gina. Gina is my big sister.
You owe me some money for this, so
listen.
We'll see how much the tab is going to go up. Go ahead.
I'm going to pay you double what we get. How's that?
Double nothing.
Call it in markers.
So, any case, we have known each other. My gosh, when did y'all become part of the LA Church, our church in Los Angeles?
96.
No, March
95. The LA Church, yes. We were in Redondo Beach, so. Not in South Central.
Okay. And when did you guys come over?
It was not after 96. It was 97, actually, Stephen.
When you got to South Central?
Yes.
If you're watching one of our fellowships, one of our churches, it's called the Los Angeles Church of Christ, International Church of Christ, and it was a huge church, but we were all in a particular section called South Central. South Central, L.A. And so, any case, that's where we met. So, do we even know when we met? What's our origin story?
Who was leading when you came to South Central?
Charles and Katrina, and then you know Charles, Katrina, Jock, the Ivies. Mm-hmm. We can go on and on. Were you guys in Inglewood with the Braves?
Yeah, with the Braves.
Yes.
Okay. And then you were there when you guys became the Axe Ministry?
No.
I don't remember.
I thought you guys were in Axe.
Probably, but I don't remember.
What was Axe?
Axe is where DC and Cynthia were.
Oh, okay.
We were there. I just didn't know the name of it.
They called it Axe. Stephen's best. Stephen's best friend and mentor, who shall not be mentioned.
I don't remember that. There's always a name change.
And so, real quick, funny story with Stephen in particular. Stephen went to law school with my brother. And I don't know when did we find this out? I don't even remember that.
Fairly early on. Yeah, you mentioned, because you said Blake and your brother Georgetown, and I said, Blake, who saved my life for tax.
Yes.
My life in tax class.
So my brother helped Stephen get through a class. Sam disappeared. She'll be right there. I guess she's getting a call or something. Put your phone on do not disturb it. But he
did.
Stephen went to law school with my brother, my older brother. And I actually lived in D.C. summer of 84 while he was in law school. I went to St. Augustine and what's that school that where you come down the steps? It's a private boys Jesuit school and you look and you can see the Capitol.
Gonzaga.
I went to Gonzaga. Yeah. So any case, so we're around the same area. But any case, your story, Stephen and Gina. Gina is from Florida, Lakeland. Stephen has become Florida man, though he's from the Northeast. But give me all your story, your origin story, how y'all met, when y'all met.
We were just talking about that the other day. We're coming up on, 39 years or something like that? 39 years that we met. We met actually longer ago than that. We were actually dating other people when we first met. We started dating in August of 1986.
Oh my, wow.
Yeah, watch
Gina, you look good.
I try.
Coming up on 40 years.
Genetics,
being together.
Thank you.
Then, so I'm originally from Washington, D.C. Gina went to Howard University.
H-U?
You know.
I went there for a year as an exchange student from Tufts University in Boston, where I graduated. The Tufts University. And then graduated from Georgetown Law School in 86. Started dating Gina after I graduated. Went from there to the Virgin Islands in 88. Was there for 2 years until Hurricane Hugo came through. And then moved to Los Angeles. And then from there, depending on who you talk to, Gina followed me, or she claims I begged her to come. So then we reunited in Los Angeles, got married in 92, October of 92, and got baptized into the LA Church of Christ in March of 95, while Gina was 3 months pregnant with our oldest daughter, Lauren, 2-for-1. Lauren was born in September 95. Our son Spencer was born in November 96. And our youngest surprise Jamaican baby was born in March of
2001. So wait a minute. You guys went to Jamaica, had some oxtails and a little rum.
Yeah.
It was the rum punch in the afternoon. That's what it is.
Stephen, when were you in the Virgin Islands?
I was an assistant attorney general down there. My cousin, who was the deputy.
When?
When?
Yeah.
When?
Yeah. When?
I was there from 88 to 89.
And which island?
So I was in St. Croix, but I did some work on St. Thomas as well. At Crucian. Give me a lick, my son.
Oh, the Crucian, the Creole. Okay. Yeah, because it's funny because I think I left there in 88.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sam was in St. Thomas for junior high?
From 84. I was there for sixth grade through ninth grade. So junior high, elementary, junior high, and then my first year of high school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the conch.
The conch? Yes, green bananas. Yeah,
butterconk. They do the butterconk only in the Virgin Islands.
Mm-hmm. It's good too.
Delicious. It is delicious. Mm-hmm.
And so, did Gina wait until you passed the bar until she agreed to date you or marry you?
No.
I wasn't thinking about that. My roommate, her father was a dentist. He went to Howard as well as his friend. So she knew a bunch of the kids, like not kids, but students that Stephen knew in common. So she met Stephen somewhere at a party or something, and she tried to pawn him off on me. That's basically what happened. She said,
She was dating my friend.
She said, "This guy was perfect for Gina, not for me." So that's what happened. Yes, we were people at the time. So she, for some reason, thought that we would match, and I wasn't thinking about that.
She finally came to her senses.
Well, the begging helped a lot.
Hey, Gina, my sister, I'm right with you. Stand for me out. It's like Luke 18.
Well, we're all still friends together, so it worked out so far.
That's fantastic.
So then in 2004, we moved to Miramar, Florida, which is in between Fort Lauderdale and Miami, and joined the Broward Church of Christ. Used to be called South Florida Church of Christ, now Broward Church of Christ or Broward Church. And so we were there for almost 20 years. And now we've a new adventure. We had to move away from our home to become empty nesters. And so now we are living in
Yay!
downtown Tampa and part of the Anchor Point Church of Christ.
Wowzers. So how did y'all come to church? Like, what was that? How did y'all get there? Like, or what I say, like your faith journey.
We were actually doing Amway, and we're in the grocery store. Saw this tall, muscular-looking guy who
Hebe.
turned out to be a fire captain
Oh, I
for the
thought you were talking
Marine.
about me, but I was like, I don't really
No.
You're not tall, bro. No muscle. So we met this tall guy, and we shared Amway with him, and he shared Jesus with us. And so we went to David Beaudry's and his wife's Bible talk, and we actually went to Bible talk for a full year. And we lost
Oh.
Sam. Where'd Sam go?
I have no idea. We'll get her back in a second. I'm sure she'll ring back in.
We went to Bible talk for a full year before we even came out to church, because we were going to a denominational church at the time. And after every meeting, we liked it because it was young people, and the church that we were attending was mainly old people.
And they actually talked about the Bible instead of fighting with
and they
each
had
other.
food every Tuesday night.
Every Tuesday
Every Tuesday.
Oh, I know Stephen loved that.
We were dinky, full income, no kids, so we were like, this is fun. Get some food. Talk about the Bible. After every session, they would invite us to come to church. We're like, no, we got our own church. And then we had some challenges that started happening in our denominational church. I won't go into
The
that. It's another
minister
long
left,
story.
the priest left.
Anywho, yeah, I was trying to skip all that. Anyway,
He went to Africa on a
no, but
mission.
that wasn't the reason,
I
though.
know.
Anywho,
He running from
so
the
I
law.
said, "Are you being seriously focused?" And she said, "No." And so I said, "Well, let's do something different." So we called our friends and said, "Hey, can you take us to church? Let us know where your church is." They said, "Yeah, sure." We went, we loved it, started studying the Bible. We studied for about 3 months, and that's when we got baptized in March of 95.
Oh, come on.
Rest is history. So coming up on
28, 30,
30
20.
years.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it will be 30 years.
30
This
years. This
March,
March.
next month.
March.
March 11th, 30 years.
Wowzers. And you guys have been married for how long?
32 years.
It'll be 33 in October.
Oh, okay, so you
33.
guys were just in sin for 7 years, and then you got married.
Three
Yeah,
years.
that's right.
Was it sin?
Yeah, because we were dated in 86.
1990.
We
Oh,
started dating
yeah.
in 86, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying we weren't married. No.
Yeah,
Oh.
we dated for 5 years and had a year-long engagement because we got married on a cruise ship.
Hey, come on.
In the Bahamas.
And so you got your 3 year oldest, Lauren, who's in Miramar. Actually, all your kids are in Miramar, right? Except for Spencer.
No,
Nope,
he's
they're all
there.
there. They're all there.
Oh,
They got
they took over your house and kicked you out.
their house. They took over the house, yep.
It looks great. They redecorated. It's beautiful.
Couldn't do it while you were there.
I'm a guest.
Excellent. So If I were to ask you, and I do this with everyone, actually, let me back it up because this is on Presentable Parts. We wanted to get to know you a little bit. One of the things we do as part of our time is share what's unpresentable about us. And the idea is from 1 Corinthians 12, where it says the unpresentable parts we treat with special modesty. And the goal of our podcast is generally to talk about things let's just say they require a special level of care, that they're difficult and nuanced, and it can be tough to talk about in church. But part of what we do is talk about what's unpresentable about ourselves today. I'll ask my wife if she wants to start. If not, then I'll start.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I can start. I think today, I think I was doing a lot of work in the office today, and I just, you know, when I get on a roll, I can't stop. And so I think what made me feel unpresentable for me today is that my brain is still racing of the things that I need to get done, though I know I will get it done. And then I didn't get to put makeup on. I didn't get to put some lipstick on. And so I'm just like,
and oh, you still look what it is.
Thank
good.
You, Stephen. Thank Mouse. You. Thank you. And so I'm definitely feeling like a little blah and a little hungry, a little blah, but grateful to be here.
Good. You look fine to me. You don't look a day over 50. Fine.
Can't stand that man.
How have you stayed with him this long?
Listen.
Any affidavit you have to say that he drove you to it.
Yeah, okay.
I think for myself, I'm actually feeling pretty good. I think the wintertime, I'm tired of the cold. I love New England, but January and February are the wackest months ever. And we've had mild winters, and so all of a sudden winter decided to kick in. So, but other than that, actually, I'm feeling pretty good. So I'm feeling pretty good. I don't feel too unpresentable. My wife may know some of my unpresentable parts, but in any case, for y'all, I know Gina's already. Hold on, let me see if I can guess.
What?
I'm tired. I just got off work. I don't want to.
That's what I'm saying. I was going to say. But my tired is not a physical tired. My tired is mental because I'm still really in mourning for my mother. Mm. And just a lot of change. We moved. That was crazy. Moving. Things are out of order. You know how big our house is. We had stuff everywhere. It was physical labor. Then we got here. The job didn't pan out like Stephen wanted. And then my mother passed away. I mean, it's just gone on and on and on. So basically, and then I have insomnia. So every third or fourth day, I'm just out of it. Mm. But what I have started to do, and I'm old, like you said. I don't have the patience.
You're not old.
Yeah, well, I'm older than I was. Anywho, just not letting anxiety, not frustration really, just tired of mind and tired. I want to go to sleep, but I can't, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's all. It's the same thing. Getting just a change in not being able to do all the things that my mind tells me that I can do, that I used to do very easily. And now it's like, go sit down before you hurt yourself. And not being able to see, and hand coordination, just things that I was excellent at, and now.
Yep, nobody prepares you. What about you, Stephen?
I don't know. I mean, other than just regular day-to-day challenges of life, getting old, pulled a calf muscle in right before Thanksgiving playing pickleball of all things. And so I'm just now getting healed from that and trying to get back down into a regular workout routine. Start getting lose some of this weight that I gained from not working out. And It's hard to get into since I am semi-retired now, only working part-time. So it's been difficult to get into a regular morning routine that I had before. So just got to work on that.
Yep. Real life. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, Gina. I did. You lost your mom in July?
August.
In August.
It seems like, and that's another thing I keep telling Stephen, it seems like it was just like a month ago, but it's been almost 5 months, almost 6 months now. But it's still fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially with the moving, all the stuff going on, you don't get a chance to process fully. Yeah.
And you were her main caretaker, right?
Well, she was at my house, but I won't say I was her main caretaker because my daughter did almost everything. Both my sisters. So hospice. But during hospice.
Before hospice,
me and my sister, but it didn't
and
take
our daughter
that much.
Helped out.
Yeah, everybody always helped out. So I was not like the main, I was main half because my sister did most of the other half. So. I don't want to discredit them at all because at the end there, when I did a lot of stuff, they did everything.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Well, amen. So, 32 years being married, 3 adult kids. You've served in all different versions of the church. Sam's going to keep popping in and out, and we'll figure
I don't.
Out.
I just. I apologize. I don't know what's happening, so
no
I'm here. Yeah.
We know who you are.
If you want to switch over to your laptop camera, babe, that'll probably be better. That's fine. We'll work it.
I can try. Okay.
Let's see if we can get her back on. But
she's showing herself to be unpresentable.
I was like, she's looking the best. She's looking the best out of all of us.
I'm talking about the camera.
Uh-oh. Hold on for a second. Okay. So...
I have no idea what's happening.
It's fine. If I were to ask you your 3 secrets for having a successful marriage after 32 years, what would you share?
This is disconcerting. You don't know, huh?
You don't know your secrets?
Okay. So I think just propinquity, being close. You have to be close. Physical closeness.
I've never heard that word before. What word was that? Yeah.
Propinquity. Propinquity.
It's just the SARS.
I'm going to have to look that one up.
Propinquity. Yes. Anyway, physical closeness. And also, but enjoying that, if somebody doesn't, then something is wrong. But anyway, and just talking to each other like another real close friend, not trying to get your argument together to present a case. And then forgiving, put the other person above you. Not meaning that you do everything they tell you to do, but think about what they are going through and try to help them and not always try to have your way and everything. Mm. You know, some things are important. You have to discuss and come to an agreement, but stuff that people fight about that is just so stupid. And then they fight about it. It's like, why do you have to tell another grown person how to park the car, and then you get mad because they don't park it like you park it? People do fight about dumb stuff like that. They do. Mm-hmm. So, those are the things that I think, having a like mind and goals.
For me, I would say the most important thing, especially early on in our marriage, because we'd only been married for 2.5 years, a little less than 2.5 years when we got baptized, was discipling, discipling, discipling.
Now, for those that may not be a part of our fellowship or our tribe of churches, what discipling, you mean one another relationships?
one another relationships, getting with other couples. I mean, that was part of the things that attracted us to the fellowship that we're in, is we saw people actually living out Christianity every day in their lives, not only in their personal lives, but in their marriages and how they were raising their kids. And, you know, we had been together for what, for 9 years before we came to Christ. So we had a lot of baggage. So we had a lot of stuff, and we needed help. We couldn't do it on our own. So we needed help, constantly getting with people, whether it be on the phone, whether it be in person, and then them being able to take the same information that we were learning and share with others. I saw a great, diagram, the other day that was shared in our Bible talk, and it talked about retention rates. And the different retention rates from 5%, you only retain 5% of what you hear in a lecture. It goes all the way to 90%. You retain 90% when you're actually teaching what you're learning. And so being able to then give back to others what we received by helping them and discipling their marriages and helping with their marriages and raising their kids, but at the same time still helping us and allowing us to grow. So I think that was one of the biggest things. I think we probably wouldn't still be married if we weren't Christians, if we weren't disciples, and if we didn't get that early on help. And then the next thing is being comfortable with our differences. We spend a lot of time together and we enjoy each other's company, but we spend time apart and we allow each other to have that time apart, whether it's me going out to hang with the guys, whether it's her going out to hang with her friends, whether it's her doing her jewelry or watching the silly shows that she likes to watch, or the awesome, incredible sci-fi shows that I like to watch in different rooms. We give each other space to do the stuff that we like to do that doesn't involve each other. And then when we find the stuff that we like to do together, we come together and we do that as well. So, yeah, I would say those are the two biggest things for me. And also, not being afraid to be silent. Not everybody's like that. That's just our thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe others too. But we can be in the same room, or we can be in a car ride and not speak. We can just enjoy the silence. and it's not awkward. It's not, we don't feel like we have to fill the air with sound or talk.
Yeah. There or to-do lists.
Sometimes there's not even any music playing. We just hear the tires rolling. You know, just enjoying the silence of the moment. Yeah.
Peace.
So those are the things that have helped you. What have been the toughest parts in overcoming some of maybe your negative dynamics? What have been some of the toughest things or what you've seen that's been hard for you guys to overcome in maybe a negative dynamic?
Again, this was probably early on in our marriage. I would say for the last several years, we've almost kind of been on cruise control. But early on, when we had some, you know, difficult challenges, the biggest thing we had to overcome was just respect and being able to listen, especially on my part. You know, Gina had basically become shut down and would not even engage in discussions, what I call discussions, what she called arguments, because she felt like I was never going to listen to what she had to say. So then she would just, okay, I'm just not going to participate. And it took other couples pointing it out to us, saying, your wife has shut down and she's not engaged. So you're never going to understand what she's going through or what she's feeling because you're not listening. You're just trying to drive home your point and you're trying to drive home your message.
Like a lawyer.
Like an attorney.
A great litigator.
Not at work, okay?
I'm not going to understand, bro.
I would be like, I don't need you to agree. I'm just letting you know what's going to happen. We don't have a discussion about it. This is what's going to happen. Talk to yourself, talk yourself in or out of it, whatever. But I'm going to do A, B, C, and D, just letting you know. But that was in the beginning. So, yeah, we learned how to communicate.
I didn't think the other thing was Gina had, because we kept, definitely came from different backgrounds. I came from a very dysfunctional family. Father separated, a lot of abusive language and abuse in the family. Gina came from a very functional family. And so even before we became Christians, I remember when we got married, we were living in a two-bedroom condo in Los Angeles, and we had a fight. And so I got up and I went into the other bedroom and was going to go to sleep in the other bedroom. And then Gina came in there. You tell the rest of the story.
And that's how, everyone was conceived.
I was like, what do you know? I was like, what are you doing? You can't sleep in another room. He's like, no, we're having a fight. I'm like, we're married. My parents never did that. So I was like, that's television. People don't do that. In my mind, I had no concept of someone that I would actually not sleep together if they were married, even if they were mad. My parents never did that. My father came home every night. They could have been fighting or whatever, but I didn't know. Because they didn't tell us. And I'm sure they didn't get along every single day. Mm-hmm. But it was foreign to me. So I was telling Stephen, no, we will never, never do that. I might try to smother you in the middle of the night, but you will not sleep in another room. That's the point. I was like, that makes no sense.
She said, we're not married for nothing. The least you can do is snuggle.
That's what I'm saying. Do that. You can't do that, right? I'd be punished. You're the one who's not me.
Just because you mad, why do I got to suffer?
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Just because you mad, you messed up, why do I have to be punished?
Do your job.
Thank you.
Do the work.
Do something. Do that. At least do that.
So now you guys have been in the church now 30 years, been in a fellowship and been Christians, and you guys have help, because I know we were together in Los Angeles. You guys have helped a lot of marriages. You guys have done marriage retreats and things like that, correct?
Yeah.
So you've taught a marriage retreats. What are, if you were to say some, if I ask you for a list of like the three things that couples get messed up in the church about marriage?
Immature emotionally, want to have a fights with each other about silly stuff, and they talk to their husband or wife like they're talking to another teenager or something. And we're like, you guys are below level sub in these conversations. The way you're talking to each other is like I would talk to someone I didn't know on the telephone if I was yelling at them. You don't talk to your husband or wife, you've invested. You stood up and you said you're going to be with them for the rest of your life. That's the only person that volunteers to be with you for the rest of your life. Everybody else leaves. So you cannot let your life be influenced or your relationship with your husband or wife be influenced by what you see. Stop looking at all these people arguing with each other and doing all this crazy stuff. That's nothing but a bomb, ticking time bomb. You have to be rational, emotionally mature, and just reasonable. The point of having a conversation is not for you to get your way, it's to learn something.
I say that, and also two aspects of communication that are vital to a marriage having success and being a peaceful and thriving marriage. Number one is understanding that you always have a choice when you receive stimuli. Mm-hmm. Nobody can make you mad. Nobody can make you sad or whatever. You are choosing to take that stimuli in and receive that quote unquote trigger. That's the word everybody uses now. You triggered me. Well, how you respond to that trigger then is your choice, right? Mm. So before you respond to that trigger, express what's happening emotionally rather than responding in kind, right? If you receive something like, say, a sarcastic comment or an angry comment or whatever, a cutting remark, rather than responding in kind, express how you feel. Hey, you know, when you said that, that really hurts me, or that made me feel this, or that made me think that you think that I'm XYZ and that hurts me. Is that what you meant? Because 9 times out of 10, the person didn't mean it that way. That's just how it came out. So now you're giving your spouse a chance to either apologize and or explain what they actually meant. And now you can have a conversation. And so being able to repeat back what you're hearing from the other person in a calm and logical manner, but expressing your feelings, how you feel, as opposed to trying to, quote unquote, win the argument or respond to the stimuli.
Clap back.
Oh, it's my favorite. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so Gina, Stephen. Yeah, I was going to ask, because I think even as you're talking about that, I think for some couples, right, you get to the place where you start having children. And I think for a lot of women, they struggle with that transition. They struggle with that transition because, especially if you're nursing your children, especially when they're really young, it tends to, and it seems like in many cases, it just falls a lot on the mother. And I know as coming into my marriage with Tim, super independent, we're super independent. And then having a child, I think I initially struggled with, look, this kid is latched onto me all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you out here can go do everything you want, and he's latched on to me. And so I really felt that, and I really struggled with it initially. I love my son, but I struggled with the change from being a young married person who, in a lot of ways, we have our own relationships, we did all these different things, and then I felt like I wasn't really able to as much. And I remember, I don't remember exactly what this person said to me, but they basically said, you know, it's on you, you know, essentially it's on you. It's your role to do this. And it was difficult because I didn't necessarily fully agree with that. I felt like there's a different way to do that, because I felt like that advice only enabled my husband to continue doing what he was doing. Stop it, Timothy.
I understand.
Yeah, and
yeah, so we got the opposite advice.
Well, no, some people gave us some advice, and I was like, no, you don't do that.
And so I think it's just kind of, what would you suggest to someone today? Like, it is, we are going to have a lot more on us, because especially if we're nursing a child but helping people understand that based on their situation, there are different ways to, it doesn't have to be, well, you're the mom, so it's all on you. I think a lot of people honestly believe that.
Yeah. Well, if they married somebody who thinks that everything is on the mom, then they need to do some reevaluation. My thing is, if you this whole thing with the trad wife, blah, blah, blah.
Trad wife, want a trad traditional
husband,
wife.
You need to be a trad, you need to be a trad husband. And if you're not the trad husband, then don't expect the trad wife. The traditional wives who stayed home with, they had babysitters, they have nannies, they have somebody to help them. So, I mean, if you got it rolling like that, that's good. But if not, you definitely, even on the, not just the physical side, but the emotional side of it, need to be in tune with your children. And that's the kind of person you need to know that your spouse is. Not just before you start having kids, but when you know you're going to have a child, because you're not going to sit down and talk about all this stuff that much before you have a child. You're not even going to know everything that's going to happen. But what are you willing to do? What do you know how to do? What are you not willing to do that I need you to do? Because I had friends who used to be so mad at their husbands because their husband wouldn't do this and the husband wouldn't do that. But then when they tried and they left the kid with the husband, they would complain about every single thing the husband did. Mm. I was like, no, you can't have both. You have to
Let go.
Let go. He's not gonna, unless he's gonna throw the baby away or so. I don't know. What do you think he's gonna do to the baby? He's not gonna dress the baby in matching outfits. Okay, it's not gonna kill him. But you, if you want a break, if you want your husband to help you, then you allow him to do, or you talk together and agree about what he's gonna do. Because when we first had our first baby, Stephen took off 2 weeks. And then we had a schedule of who's going to do what when I would sleep and when he would sleep. And then we changed it up when he went back to work. So you just, you know.
Well, we got even advice from our mother, which was great advice, because she was like, she told Gina, she said, now, if Steven's changing the diaper, don't tell him he's doing something wrong. Let him change the diaper how he wants to change the diaper. Just be glad he's changing the diaper.
That's right.
And that's really struck with us, because we actually have a good friend of ours who had 3 daughters and he never changed one single diaper.
Ooh.
Yeah, one.
He didn't even want to babysit.
So
he used to bring kids to our house.
So I really changed my share of diapers. I probably changed as much, if not more, diapers than Gina. Now, Gina didn't nurse that long with each of our kids, so that wasn't an issue. So I was able to help with the feedings. But that was the other thing that really helped us as far as our marriage, is that especially once we became Christians, once we became disciples, we knew what is the priority of life. God first, then your spouse, then your children, then your job and other things, you know, your hobbies, activities and things like that. And so the children were never placed above each other, and they certainly weren't placed above God. So we never had an issue of competing interests. If anything, our children had to compete for our time, because our time was God first and then each other, and then, okay, yeah, I got a little time for you.
It's 7:30, time to go to sleep or go to bed. I did. I used to tell them to go to bed. You don't have to go to sleep, because I can't make you go to sleep, but don't come out of that room.
And that's older. I mean, when they were babies, they just went everywhere with us. We weren't trying to put, that's what, you know, a lot of the things the parents are doing nowadays, you know, trying to give a 6-month-old or a 1-year-old a bedtime. It's like, for what? No, they will sleep wherever. Lauren was born. We put her in the bassin in the little carry-on stroller, car seat stroller thing.
Take her to a restaurant.
Take her to a restaurant. Nice. Took her to restaurant. Other people's houses for discipling times, for times to study the Bible with people.
They slept.
I remember one time we had some people over visiting, and I think we were all in the living room, and we said, okay, Spencer, it's time for you to go to bed.
Nap.
And no, it was bedtime.
Bedtime. Oh, I don't remember.
He got up, came over and hugged and kissed everybody and walked himself to bed. And the people were just like, what is he doing? They're like, he's going to bed. They're like, by himself? He's not fussing or crying? Like, no. We told him to go to bed. He's going to bed.
That's it.
What he's supposed to do.
I didn't hold him or anything. I didn't do any of that. I just was like, this is it. This is bedtime. Do you in the room that I have provided? You can read a book. No electronics anyway. But
there were no electronics back in them days.
VTech.
Oh yeah, there was Game Boy.
They had the most.
Yeah.
So
no, I appreciate that. I just thank you for saying that. I think some. It's interesting. Our current generation of parents, there's just, I think it's good for them to hear that, and it's not stifling your children, and also not competing, you know,
right.
I think that's super helpful.
And the other thing was,
were you going to say something, babe?
As soon as they were able, they were out of the bassinet and into their own room. There was none of this sleeping in our bed. Sleeping in our room. The only time they slept in our bedroom is if they were sick. They were not in the bed with us. We had friends who were letting their kids still sleep with them all the way up until 5 years old and later. I'm like, what are you doing?
I'll tell you, I was one of those.
You're talking to friends.
We co-slept, and the reason why we did, Tim and I both don't do well without sleep. And our first child, we tried, I will tell you this thing, we tried this book called, someone gave me the book Timewise. I'm like, that book is from the devil. That's how I felt about it. I did not feel good about the schedules. I did not feel good. We tried leaving him in that room to sleep. That baby sweated through his clothing.
Listen. He was like, it was like Michael Jordan game six in the fourth quarter. He was screaming. We went in there. We let him, you know, for an hour. Just let him just, and went in there. He's standing right there, just sweating, crying. I was like, man, come on. As soon as you put him in bed. So for us,
when Spencer was born, Spencer and Lauren are only 14 months apart. When Spencer was born, I said, we're not going to have two in bottles because Lauren had already started doing the sippy cup. Mm-hmm. I said, so no more bottles for her. She was used to going to bed with a bottle, which we didn't know until later that that's probably not good for your teeth anyway. So we said, okay, I'm going to put her in her crib, give her a sippy cup, and that's it. First night, she probably cried and screamed for about 6 hours, maybe even longer, 12 hours. It was longer than 30 minutes. However long it was, she cried for one night or two nights, whatever it was, and then that was it. So,
I think it's.
I let him cry out. It's really hard. It's really hard. To let them cry it out because you feel bad and like you say, sweating through their clothes and all that stuff. Oh well, so sorry.
I grew up in the Caribbean, right? And we're co-sleepers because remember, you have 3-4 bedroom houses here in the Caribbean. You mm-hmm. had, you know, depending on where you are, you don't have 3-4 bedroom houses. So co-sleeping was culturally normal. And so,
it's up to the parents.
Amen. You got a second one in.
Yeah, I don't like children sleeping with me because they move around too much and keep me awake. I couldn't do it because I was like, I have to have some time where somebody is not touching me. You know, it's like this is too much. And I have like a, I'm like. Like you said, latched on. Somebody's always trying to touch you. I'm like, no, thank you. Don't touch me.
Yeah,
especially we were dealing with finances sometimes in our marriage, and so you know you learn to incorporate some of the challenges you might be having financially with helping out each other. So, you know, my birthday is always around Mother's Day, and Gina's birthday is always around Father's Day. So her Mother's Day gift, especially when the kids were young, was she got to go in the room and go to sleep, and the kids were mine for that whole
three
thing.
We
go to church on Sunday, come home, kids were mine, whether I took them out to the park or whether I took them outside or whether we just sat and watched cartoons or played games or whatever. She had no responsibilities with the kids on Mother's Day. That was her Mother's Day gift. She did not do nothing with the kids. Like,
a lot.
But we did that on other days too, but especially on Mother's Day.
Yeah. For us, I think my thing was on the kid part. I was like, listen, just get them in the bed. They'll sleep. We sleep. That was my thing. Sam used to get mad at me because when our kids were very young, especially our first Tyler. I would take him and she would go do whatever and she would come home and we'd be knocked out on the couch. And she's like, how come every time you come up, they're sleeping? I'm like, hey, he sleep, I sleep. We could. We could.
That's right. We could,
buddy. And so she used to get so mad at me about that. But the one thing, Stephen, you said about one of the issues that people have is responding to stimuli. Sam, you use a great analogy, and I don't remember if you did it on a pod or we were somewhere, but you shared about the what's in your cup.
You want me to say it?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's the analogy of if I am holding a cup of coffee and Tim bumps into me and I spill coffee, why did I spill coffee? Like, why did I spill the coffee? Because I had coffee. Exactly. I had coffee in my cup. If I had water in my cup, water would have spilled out. If I had nothing in my cup, nothing would have spilled out. And I think most people will say, oh, you spilled it because Tim bumped into you. It's like, no, I spilled coffee because I had coffee in my cup. Mm. You know, and so it's just kind of like in our relationships. And I think, Steve, when you talk about the trigger, it's, you know, the me spilling a coffee was because of the, you know, it was partly because, yes, there was a bump, right? And people would say, well, you triggered me. No, that bump only brought out what was inside of me. I had ammunition inside of me. I had something. Mm-hmm. The trigger only, like, you can only shoot something, or you can, you know, because the ammunition is already there. The trigger just, you know. Expels it. Yeah. And so,
as the Bible says, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Right?
Yes.
It is an overflow.
That scripture hits it perfectly.
Perfectly.
Yeah. So
we're going to end here pretty quickly, because I want to have you guys on again to talk about a few other things. But the one thing I love about both of you, and I will say, Stephen and Gina are amazing friends. Probably more Stephen, because when I was there, when Stephen said, you know, I get my friend, she get her friend. I was there. We're sitting on the couch, me and Stephen hanging out. Gina, she'll get off work, work from home. She'll grab her little margarita or whatever, go out to the patio and sit. And I'm like, oh, where's Gina? I came down to see y'all.
I need to be with you guys acting silly. You have fun,
right, Gina? Exactly.
Gina will always protect her peace.
Yeah, I love that. I am trying to imitate that, Gina.
Oh, Sam will do it.
Well, as you guys know, we are, you know, one of our strengths as far as being Christians is hospitality, and we love to entertain.
That's true.
We love to have over for dinner. Mm-hmm. We love to get to know people, whether it's hanging out with old friends or new friends, and but especially we used to throw a lot of parties, especially when we were in South Florida. We would throw a lot of parties. And at some point in the party, Gina would just go upstairs and go to bed. Y'all can stay here and party as long as you want to. And of course, I stay up until the cows come home. I'm always the last person to end a party, whether it's at my house or somebody else's party. She's like, oh, y'all have fun. I'm going to bed.
I'm done. My bad. Well, I don't feel obligated, because if they feel comfortable enough to stay late, then you family.
There you go.
Wash the dishes.
That's it. I trust you.
Turn the lights out.
Sam will go upstairs too. I'm Stephen Light. I can't roll as hard as Stephen does, but Sam will definitely. I energize with people. Sam will literally. She'll stand up and be like, "Oh, hey guys, I'm gonna go on upstairs." And she go.
That's nice.
Protect your peace. Gina don't even say something sometimes. Like, people be like, "Where you go?" I'm like, "You been there." She gone.
Okay. It's Black History Month. Both y'all were in Chocolate City, aka Washington, D.C. The question I wanted to ask you, and this may take us, we'll see. And so the question I want to ask you, because you guys been in our fellowship church, our church, for those that don't know, it is diverse. Like, it's as far as fellowships go, what I've seen, it's very diverse. I noticed a few years ago, probably about 10 years ago, actually, we were having marriage retreats and parenting workshops, but I had never been to a parenting workshop or marriage retreat where a person of color was doing the lessons. And I started bringing that up. I'm like, hey, like, only white people got good marriages? Do only white people know how to raise their kids? Because there is a disconnect, right? There, not a disconnect, but cultural
differences.
We raise our children differently, depending. And so the question I wanted to ask you and is, what is your experience culturally being part of our fellowship, and how people address marriage and how they don't? because you guys have been in your original ministry was you guys were in the minority. Then you were in South Central. Well, we were up in South Florida. You got everything. You got everything. So what's that been like for you? Or have you had that same experience? Or what do you see as some of the issues within our fellowship in that regard?
I think at the core of it, there is no difference. Everyone basically responds to the same love of God, just like they do to love to each other. Mm-hmm. Like you said, a lot of people can see my situation and think, oh, you were raised like white people or something. You know, my family, we didn't fight each other. And we didn't yell at each other. And my father did not do any of that stuff. But then in some people's family, so I didn't see, to answer your question, I don't see a difference culturally. The only thing that I see maybe in raising kids, and I don't think it's culturally, I think it's more generational, because I have lots of friends who are not black my age who say the same things about raising their kids. It's generational more so, where they're these long negotiations with a 2-year-old. I don't get it, but amen. You know, they think you don't know what you're doing if you're asking them what they should do. That's why they're upset, but I don't see it that way. I don't see it. There are some blatant things that we think, but I'm from the South. So a lot of the people, no matter what color they are, it's just the cultural, socioeconomic level of how you're raised. Because I was raised around all kinds. Lakeland is a weird kind of place. The people mix. If you want to mix together, you mix. I mean, I had all kinds of friends. And I went to their house and stuff. Their mother talked to them just like my mother talked to me. And did not take, they didn't talk back to their mother. So I wasn't, to me, again, that's television. I don't know about that. I've seen people who do that, but I wasn't raised around that kind of thing. So to me, it's no difference, just so much culturally, but more so generational.
That's good.
That's probably true as well, because obviously, especially with my background, you're going to spank a child. But what we learned early on, since we were already in the church by the time Lauren was born, was we learned that there is a way to spank a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my recollection of spankings, and one of my youngest recollections of spankings, as I was sitting there fussing at my mother or whatever, and next thing I knew, my father had come up behind me, picked me up by my arm, so I'm dangling in the air with my leg. So he brought my behind to his hand level, bam, 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 and then dropped me down. And that's a spanking.
My dad,
you know, we didn't do spanking as disciples. You say, you give the warning. You say, okay, you didn't obey. Now let's go into the room. Let's discuss why you're getting the spanking, you know, what you did wrong, what did you do wrong, how many spanking you're going to get, what's the offense, is it going to be one, is it going to be two, whatever. Okay, now you spank, now you're crying, okay, now what do you say, you apologize, you pray, you resolve the issue, and then you move on. It's a long process. And I used to tell people, I said, giving a child a timeout is easy, because all you're doing is telling them to go into the corner, and they're not learning anything other than the fact that they're not being isolated. When you spank a child, I just described, you're teaching them a process and you're resolving it because you're praying and you're getting everything resolved at the end. And so that was a huge thing for us to learn how to spank like that. And you know, you're not taking a switch. I used to have to go out and pick my own switch, you know. So,
yes. You know, we were doing stuff just like to that. Keep them on hand, just to show.
So, I wanted to add on to
we had people that were of all races that were teaching us how to spank our children like that. And obviously, you're going to come across people who raise their children differently, and you're going to take some of what they say. And then the other thing is just to have the confidence in yourself to understand you can listen to different people, and then you got to pray and figure it out yourself, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And don't feel like you have to mimic exactly what other people are doing.
And it's to the child too, because Spencer was like me. He could take a spanking every day. I was like, just do it. I got other things to do. I wasn't upset like my feelings hurt or you spanked me. I was like, I know I did something wrong. Just give me that spanking so I can go on and get on with it. But my sister, you know, you have to know the different child, because some people, kids, you know, don't want to be reprimanded. And I was like, you caught me this time, so we'll see. It's just the temper. You have to know your children. You know the temperament.
Sam?
No, I was going to ask. So I appreciate that answer. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the other thing that I wanted to ask, though, and even with parenting, is that I do think we can learn from anyone. I do agree with that. I do think, though, that I probably would have answered that question years ago, like you, Gina, being from the Caribbean, and not necessarily experiencing many of the things I've experienced in America. But I think that what I've realized is the value, because I actually have had, we're about to have a marriage retreat. I've had a few people reach out to me about, hey, can we get some help on interracial marriages and raising children of mixed race, because that's not spoken about. And so there's emotional maturity. Yes, there's people doing some of the work themselves, but I think representation matters.
Yes.
And I think having been in the education system, having been a classroom teacher, I see that more and more and more. It's representation matters. And so what I have found is I value having the visual of a traditional husband, wife of color, because many perceptions, because it teaches not just the majority in the room, the majority in America, it doesn't just teach the minorities or help the minorities feel comfortable or people in the minority, but it teaches everyone to value and to see beyond the stereotype, because there is a stereotype that many of our members who are of color live with, who may have come from unstable families, who may have come from single parent families, that were people, and then learning how to do marriage, or who came from stable families, but there's a stigma or a perception that maybe they didn't. So I think it's just, so what I have found over the years is I found the value of being able to say, no, we need to diversify this. This is important. It's important for the people who are in the majority. It is important for the people who are in the minority. And we need to go a step further, because our culture is a very mixed race culture. And we need to consider that those children, how they actually have a struggle. A black kid doesn't have, or a white kid doesn't have. They have a different struggle, because they feel the pressures of having to choose a race, you know, which is, I think that's not okay, you know, but how society defines. So I just think that's probably where I land on that, is I do think that there's value in the diversity of that. And I've appreciated being able to hear from couples, like, you know, like you guys, like that matters, that what you guys represented to so many people in the South Central, like you may not even realize the value of that, but your stable marriage, your stable kids are still an influence for them, that it just wouldn't resonate the same way.
I think that's very true. I think it's always great to have different examples at large things like marriage retreats. I think the other thing, though, it's important where, again, it goes back to having those one another relationships, because especially if you're having an interracial marriage in America, you need those one another relationships for the basic things of hair care, all the way to cultural differences. You know, I remember
food.
I remember Michael Burns always tell the story about, you know, when he and his wife first got together, they had to learn and understand just the differences on how they felt about things and things of importance for his wife. Her experience with police was always negative. His experience with police was always positive. So they had to learn to be able to understand how each other were going to respond when there was police in the area or one of them was being pulled over, and how that was going to make the other person feel or not feel. And so being able to have those one another relationships to help you understand that is going to be far more valuable than having a couple up there at a marriage retreat. But the challenge is we're not getting into those one another relationships anymore. And so now you do need to have it at a retreat.
So. Yeah, that makes sense. It's funny. Sam and I've always said we're in an interracial relationship. She don't like that, but
I correct him and let him know it's intercultural.
Well, you are one of the whitest black guys I know.
That's true. What's the
Denver boy or San Diego, whatever.
I know. Growing up at the beach, but no, I think I think being able to, you know, when you mentioned about the different experience, it's funny. Actually, I was going to mention Michael Burns. It's funny you said that because he shared, you know, when he was talking to Titus and I, we were putting this together. He's like, this is valuable because there aren't any black voices talking about some of these things. And so the representation part matters. It's also, you were talking about the experience with police and all that kind of stuff. I do think being able to, the core things, we all have the core things, the communication, the conflict resolution and all that stuff. But I do think because of our cultures, it can, hearing someone that has experienced your culture, you're able to hear that differently, if that makes sense. There's language. I remember even being a minister here, one of the ministers I work with, you know, he's older white dude from the South. And I remember sharing about, oh, you know, my mom will beat my butt or my kids are acting about, you know, I was going to beat their butt. And he was like, you probably don't want to share all that beating your butt stuff in church. And I'm like, that's just normal. Yes. You know, and we were in South Central LA where we were in the majority, right? And so the way, like culturally, there was no code switching. It was just, you know, honestly, we're probably too real at times. Mm-hmm. But in any case, Sam had to, I don't know what my wife had to just do. Sorry, Sam just got up, walked away, and now she's back. But in any case, I can't even remember what we're talking about, but we've been talking for over an hour. We want to have you guys back on at some point, sooner than later, because we're going to talk about sex in the church and some of the issues that we might. I'm sorry?
Do you need some help?
Get some help.
Do I need some help? Matter of fact, I do need some help.
I can't help you.
Help my wife? No, anyway. So, but yeah, but we'd like to talk to you about, you know, how we talk about sex, how we teach our kids or don't teach our kids about sex in church, and some of the dynamics there. And then also, we want to talk a little bit about Gina, you brought up the generational things and some of the things we see generationally. And I'm also going to probably have a younger couple on that talks about, you know, kind of how they see things. Because I do think there's a generational disconnect, even just if I'm my unpresentable part. While you guys were talking about, Stephen, you were talking about spanking. There was someone who literally just posted a blog to someone that was part of our fellowship of churches about the ills of corporal punishment or physical punishment. And so I was like, oh, my gosh, we'll see what happens here. But in any case. But there is a generational and cultural disconnect indifference. And so it'd be good to talk through that stuff. But in any case, I love you. For those of you, we're so grateful. Did you guys have anything lastly you want to say before I go on?
Thanks for having us on. Miss you guys.
Send
love you.
A check. Just cash up. Zelle.
Total line. So, be in the mail, right?
So all of my the checks that I send out, they come from China, and evidently I've heard that we're not accepting any mail from China. So I'm so sorry. As soon as that gets taken care of, we're back. Hold on. Sam, did you have anything?
No, I just wanted to thank you guys for coming on and doing this. I think it will help so many different people. And I think the being able to talk about the generational things, being able to talk about just a lot of more of the things we have in common than we things we do not. But at the same time, being able to shed light on the things that the ancillary things that are there, that because there are so many commonalities, learning those ancillary things will help us help each other.
Yeah. Amen. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Hold on really quick.
Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hold on for just a second. No, don't go nowhere yet. For those that may be interested, you can go to unpresentablepartspod.com, and we've got our website. It has all our stuff, links to where we're all what we're doing, has everything on there. So we'd love to have you come check out the check out our website and all that. You got the soon come Eve edition will be back online very soon. But in any case, appreciate the Mitchells. Love you. We'll catch up and
peace.
Stay up.
Love and soul.